Hey, hello there, everyone watching. Chris Manning here from the Locked On Cavs podcast, doing a little live solo episode here on Saturday, November 5th. Shout out to everyone in the chat. Chris the Afro, first to comment. Fun Cavs game last night. No Darius Garland, no Donovan Mitchell. They still win 112-88 over the Detroit Pistons. And the star of the show, obviously, is to me, Evan Mobley. We'll talk about Evan Mobley. We'll talk about why that win matters and all of that in this little live. She'll take some questions, too. We're going to go for about 20 minutes or so. For some weekend games, we're going to try to do this. We're a 10-minute little bonus segment that'll maybe rerun on Monday. This is a big season. This is a fun season. We got so many comments last weekend about not having something up on this feed after Cavs Celtics, so we're going to try to fill your needs for some weekend Cavs podcast / YouTube stuff. But to start with last night, I want to talk about Evan Mobley first, because this is the kind of game that he can put up on the defensive end in particular. And you can say, this is an all-defense guy. This is a guy who's going to maybe win, I would say probably win at this trajectory, win Defensive Player of the Year at some point, provided health and all of that. He had 8 blocks in this game last night. Now, some of them could have been done with steals. Some of them could have counted that way, but he's the youngest Cavs player ever, according to the team, to record 7-plus blocks in a single game. It is the most blocks by a Cavs player in a game since Larry Nance Sr. back in 1993. I was born in 1993. Evan Mobley was not born until 2001. Mobley was so dominant defensively in this game that it just shows you that there's nothing he can't really do on the defensive end. He eats up space off ball. He blocks shots. He closes out on shooters well. Think back to the Boston game on Wednesday where we saw him run two hands up, these two long as heck arms out to the corner to defend Jaylen Brown and contest his three-pointers. And he gets there in a step or two because his legs are so freaking long. He can switch. The Cavs had him switch on Cade Cunningham in this game. He switches on Sadiq Bey in this game, and that's some of the instances where you saw him just take the ball from a driver's hands because he times it so well. He's a little stronger now, and I think that allows him to sustain himself on some of these drives against bigger wings. Now he can just snatch the ball, and I expect that to just get better and better as he goes. There's nothing he cannot do on defense, and I think right now he's an all-defensive-level player. He is this guy who you can build the defensive scheme around, who you can have him do anything. He can play the 5 defensively. He can play the 4. He can switch. And it gives you so much flexibility to do different things if you're the Cavs, right? If you're JB Bickerstaff, I think you, at this point, you should feel comfortable on trying to maximize the offense and maybe skew personnel slightly that way by playing Mobley. Mobley and Allen as well, but I think Mobley, just because he's a little more versatile, a little more able to do a bunch of different things at once, you can create different lineups to kind of get more offense on the floor to help that side of the ball, which is definitely the Cavs' worst side of the ball. Even with Mitchell, you still wonder how sometimes they're going to put together functional kind of offensive looks kind of long-term here, and I think Mobley allows you to maybe say, okay, Jetty Osman, you can figure some stuff out. We have a bomber coming in. He's just hopping in. This is troubling. Hold on one second, folks. We're going to switch this up. There he is, Evan Damerel in the house. I didn't ask him to do this. I was just like, Evan, I'm going to do something. And he showed up. What's up, brother?
Not much, man. Just in making the most of this nice weather and getting the house clean, switching over spring and summer clothes to fall and winter clothes, and tackling all the leaves in my backyard is next to my list. But yeah, I saw you went live on the YouTube channel. And I'm like, you know what? I'm cleaning my office right now. I can plug my stuff in. It's not like I haven't taken off my desk quite yet. So, yeah, it's good. I rewatched the game last night. It was it was quite a doozy in Detroit.
So, Evan Mobley defensively, Evan.
Mm-hmm.
I think, among the things that I would say I would feel very comfortable with being very optimistic about with this team. The defensive ceiling just feels like ridiculously high. Rob Mahoney, friend of the pod, was on Bill Simmons this week talking about.
I was just about to mention.
He made the KG comp. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm very reticent to make comps. Like, I don't love comps. I think particularly when it's like Kevin Garnett. In defensive Kevin Garnett, it's like, okay, can we just like, can we chill? But like, brother, he can do anything. Look, we haven't even seen this year, really, the 3-2 zone with him at the top of the key, just roaming around, like wrecking things. Like, we haven't seen them throw that look yet, which is kind of interesting.
No, it's super interesting at the end of the day. And I was exactly going to talk about Rob Mahoney and just how, like, it's very similar to the fact that Evan Mobley's able to seal off the weak side on defense, and just very similar to Kevin Garnett, where like you have that freakish safety valve. And I talked about this a little bit at Write Down Euclid, like the dichotomy or balance that these two have between Mobley and Allen is just really staggering, because Allen's not really allowing anything at the rim this season. And I had to pull it up for reference now. Mobley has allowed one field goal in isolation on 14 defended isolation attempts. And like, that was the one shot Pascal Siakam made in the season opener. So for reference, that's seven in isolation. Evan Mobley's allowing 7% of his shots to go in when he's defending someone in isolation. And that's crazy, man. And the fact that he can kind of just seal off opponents defensively, Simmons definitely noted, like, you saw a lot of the Celtics A game. Like, you saw Jason Tatum kind of give his all, especially down the stretch. You saw Jaylen Brown become super engaged in the second half. And then, like, last night against the Pistons, there was no Darius Garland. There was no Donovan Mitchell. And we kind of talked about this on Friday's pod when we previewed the game. Like, the Cavs certainly have the strength on the interior to kind of impose their will on Detroit. And you saw a lot of that. And it's just defensively, it was lopsided. Then offensively, like, Allen and Mobley just kept constant pressure at the rim. It's really fun stuff. And yeah, Mobley is fascinatingly leveling up even more on defense. And the offense it's still coming along slowly. I think the lack of touches is certainly a factor, but it's a fun growth at the end of the day.
When I was looking up I'm going to roast someone here for a second. Nicholas C in the chat. Evan, but Saturday LOC is such an L. Nicholas, you commented. You decided to watch.
It's free content, man.
If it is such an L for you that you have to comment, go do something better with your Saturday, my guy. Go outside. Go do something that makes you happy. Loser behavior.
If the weather's beautiful, it's going to be really loser. Yeah, like real loser behavior. You probably think it's cool Elon Musk is charging $8 for a check mark. Also, shouts to friend of the program, Mac Robinson, with the side eye emojis.
Yeah, look
Mac,
at this.
I like the picture, Mac.
Yeah,
it's very,
but
very dignified. But
loser,
let's bounce back
loser to- SH T commenting because you're such an L. Bro, you commented. Take the L, get out of here. You're just mad you don't have a successful Cavs podcast, and you're just trolling people on the internet. Loser stuff. Evan, I get a little juiced. We don't have to go 5 minutes or do our normal segments. We're a little free. We're live.
Riffin.
Yeah.
Thanks, Talib Hussein. We're also, for folks watching right now, and I'm sure we'll upload the audio in some format.
We are, yes. This will be up in the podcast feed.
Cool. We will be going live after the Lakers game tomorrow because it's nice the Cavs play at 3 o'clock on a Sunday, so Chris and I can bang out an episode at a reasonable time instead of at like 1 o'clock in the morning. But
so you mean after Cavs Celtics when I was like, Evan, I'm like at the end of the episode my brain had shorted. Yeah, that was great. Evan, last note on the rim stuff. I just want to hit this real quick. So the Cavs as a team against the Pistons, 58 points in the paint, 24 for Detroit. Pistons only took 24% of their shots at the rim. They only made 50% of them. The league average for the year, according to Clean the Glass and field goal percentage at the rim, is 64.3%. The Cavs were just Jalen Duren doesn't play. This is just beef stew. The Cavs were just like owning that middle of the floor, and like just Allen was 11-16 for 23 points on offense, and like just. Was destroying people at the rim for the most part. Just they kicked the crap out of the Pistons inside, and like that's without Garland, that's without Mobley. Yeah, or Garland without Mitchell, like, excuse me.
Mitchell, it's fine. Yeah. But this was a the Cavs opened a can of whoop ass on the Pistons here. And, you know, normally maybe last season, this is a scenario where the Cavs maybe play down to their opponent a little bit because, let's be frank, Detroit's not bad, all things considered. Like, they have a lot of fun young talent, but they have a long way to go to kind of get to the same spot with the Cavs. We actually talked about that a bit on Friday's show, but it's really interesting to see how the Cavs just like went in, took care of business, kind of just beat a team they're better than, and then just carried that positive momentum. Like, it's creepily similar to last season when the Cavs just came out of the gate super hot. Then we saw them burn out a little bit with injuries and everything else just hitting them at the same time. But it's cool to see, and I think give this 30, 40, 50 games of the season, and when things are finally clicking, where like the interior guys like Allen and Mobley benefit from playing with Mitchell and Allen as the offensive engines, like they're going to steamroll some teams. And then obviously it's going to be curious to see how teams defend them in the playoffs, but I'm really thinking about that Mahoney-Simmons bit still too. But this Cavs team is just fascinating to me because they could have easily lost this game. Like, we talked about it privately after we wrapped up the show. Like, if they rested Garland and Mitchell, like, oh, it could be a loss, but it's not the end of the world because the Cavs play an 82-game season like every other NBA team. But they went and took care of business, and they're carrying a lot of good momentum into Sunday's game in Los Angeles.
We have someone commenting about Ohio State touchdowns in this chat. And Freddie B, thanks for listening. But why are you commenting about Ohio State? This is a Cavs podcast. Go to Locked On Buckeyes for that. Good Lord, people. Get your stuff together.
You clip that audio so hard. I mean,
yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Matt, I have to edit this. Jake does not. So you know what? This is for me. This is a Chris special. Fair. Evan, I want to ask you a broad question here before we talk a little bit about I think the importance of winning without Mitchell and Garland, even if that's only going to happen like maybe once or some this year. Are the Cavs better than you thought? Because I'm going to say yes.
I'm more surprised that the transition for Donovan Mitchell is a little more seamless than I expected. I think not having Darius Garland for the first 2 weeks or so of the season kind of, you know, expedited the process a little bit, and we kind of see him just really gain that positive momentum where you just have the ball in his hands constantly. But then you look at the game against Boston, him and Garland didn't really miss a beat, and they're playing really well off each other. And again, there's going to be nights where it doesn't click, but to kind of see this Cavs team like leveling up and growing up in real time this early into the season, and they had two pretty high quality playoff caliber tests as well. But yeah, I am pleasantly surprised and kind of glad to say, like, yeah, this Cavs team is starting to hit another tier, and we'll see if it sustains. We'll see what happens with Philly, obviously. Toronto's kind of creepily good, too. But, like, right now, the pecking order is Milwaukee's number one in the East, and then, like, Cleveland and Boston are kind of jockeying right behind them.
I think this feels like a team that's going to win 50-plus games. Yeah. Like the win record stuff aside, just how well it's gone so far aside. Like, this just feels like a team that is solving problems. It feels like even if, and like, you know, we'll see what Rubio provides when he gets back. It feels like the depth so far has performed well. Like, I would be like a little concerned about like what, you know, how Jetty and Okoro in those minutes in particular are going to kind of age. Okoro did take a three pretty quickly against the Pistons. I missed it, but at least he took it.
I told myself when watching the film more closely today, I'm like, man, Isaac Okoro's had a pretty bad rough start to the year, but it's not as bad as Killian Hayes.
Okoro makes like four or five defensive plays a game, or at least positionally, where I'm just like, oh, he's still really good at that. And then last night, at the very least, like, Isaiah Stewart like came way too hard inside on defending a screen, and Okoro just like went and dunked, and that was good. But yeah, it's still kind of tricky.
It's a work in progress. Yeah, but
let's go that way.
But speaking of threes real quick,
yeah, hit me
before we transition. Have you noticed that Evan Mobley kind of hesitates at times when he's on the perimeter? Like, he does pump fake and then drive to the basket, but like, he does have a long wind up when it comes to his 3-point shots. So like, yeah, it's encouraging that he's like taking them now, but I wonder if there's still, it's still a work in progress at the end of the day.
I think he's still getting comfortable. He's much more comfortable when he's either like, he's in the free throw line in, when he gets quick pass, he gets to make a decisive move. He is so much cleaner and more effective offensively when he just goes. Like, he had a really nice post-up last night where he sealed off his defender. I think it might have been Cade, and he just kind of he took one step, wrapped the arm around, and got positioning, and it was an easy 2 points. When he has to think or he has to, like, kind of process, you can still see that's, like, a little bit slow. But, like, when he knows kind of what he's going to do and he kind of the move is going to be very clear to him, he's effective. He's also seemed like he was forcing stuff last night a little bit as well with the – like, he had the baseline jumper that was just, like, I'm not quite sure why he took that shot in that moment. But, like, the passing stuff pops a little more than anything else, which is sort of the same as last year. But he's been – you know, last night aside, he's been – like a pretty efficient scorer inside the paint. So we'll see. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Anthony Davis, you know, every time he winces aside, it's kind of interesting. You know,
I'm just thinking it's an interesting thought process because you see there is something there with Evan Mobley offensively, clearly, and you're still seeing that growth. And I think, you know, having Donovan Mitchell here kind of lightens the pressure on him. But like last night, like you said, he kind of looked like he was forcing a few things at times against the Pistons. But I also just think that's kind of what you want, because you want him to grow and learn from those mistakes. And also, who else is going to take those shots other than maybe Jared Allen, Caris LeVert, Kevin Love, who was on a burner last night. But guys that reliably don't, like, step up on a nightly basis, like, sometimes you're a little inconsistent. So, like, you look at Mobley, like, okay, we'll live with you trying to force things. We have now footage on him of what you can do, because he is a bit of a sponge as a player, just, you know, kind of being around him. He seems like he's very observant, processes things before he answers, and it's usually two or three words. But it's fascinating to watch Mobley grow in real time. And, like, last night against the Pistons was the first time, like, you really kind of saw where he's at offensively on a bit of a more full display, because you don't have Garland and Mitchell soaking up extra shots or kind of gobbling up the limited amount of attempts the Cavs have on a nightly basis.
So, all right, let's. I want to just get a quick thing off, and then I want to take some questions. So if you have questions, we already have gotten one from Vincent Isaac, we'll get to.
Please don't yell at the listeners anymore. My ears hurt from the last time you did.
That's fine. I'll just go. I'll go chugging Alani, and we'll be great.
Bro, you're an animal.
I have some rocket pops. I have actually only had one cup of tea today. We're doing great. I just slept like 11 hours last night. You know what? Sleep's pretty great. So, I want to just say this one thing that I think matters maybe more than anything else coming out of this game. Like, the Mobley stuff is more fun to talk about. The dominance is more fun to talk about. Kevin Love almost recording his first triple double since 2014.
It's the old cynic in me where I like start to like look at the there's a lot of good, but there's a couple small things I'm just like, huh.
Well, it's not even watching. This isn't even like a this isn't a bad thing. I think it matters that they won a game without Garland and Mitchell, because
oh, absolutely.
When you look ahead to where this season is going, and you look ahead to how tight maybe the East is going to be, to win a game without your two all-star guards, without your two primary offensive engines, like if it wouldn't shock me if at the end of the year the seeding in the East is decided by a game, right? Like if you're pushing with Toronto for the 3 seed or trying to get up to 2 ahead of Boston or whatever.
Well,
that one game could be like the separator. Like, yes, you're gonna have tiebreakers and stuff as well, but like this is just one of those little things in your puzzle of assembling where you're gonna end up in the playoffs. That matters. Like, that little stuff is just going to matter on the margins of trying to maximize your playoff seeding. It's like a small thing. But if they're ahead by a game in like April, and that's how they get the 2 seed or the 3 seed, this is one of those wins that like kind of just matters for that.
That is an interesting way to think about it. I do think maybe the East isn't as good as some people had hoped this season. Like the Heat, not great. They did beat the Warriors the other night, but like the Heat are a little suboptimal. The Sixers are dealing with injuries and just Doc Rivers coaching.
Harden missing a month is brutal. Brutal.
Yeah, having a 30-plus-year-old average the most minutes in the league usually isn't a good call at the end of the day. But you have Chicago like dealing with Lonzo's injury and the fact that, like, yes, they have LaVine. Yes, they have DeRozan. Yes, they have Vooch. Yes, like Pat Williams hasn't really leveled up quite yet. There's a lot of interesting things where, like, maybe some teams just aren't coming out the gates as hot as we maybe had thought they would. And the Cavs are kind of benefiting from that because, again, this fit with Donovan Mitchell has been a bit more seamless. And I agree, like, yeah, these all these wins matter at the end of the day, like in terms of the grand standings of the East. But like, again, if Cleveland kind of continues to separate themselves from that middling pack, like the Torontos, the Chicagos, we're going to lump Miami into this as well, even Philadelphia, just because of the injuries they're dealing with. If you separate from that group and you're kind of in the same trajectory as Boston, and then you're kind of nipping at the heels of Milwaukee, that seems like a realistic path just based on maybe the first nearly 10 games of the season for the Cavs.
Yeah, here's the East standings, top six as of today. Bucks are 8-0. Turns out the Bucks are pretty good. Cavs are 7-1, 7-0 since losing to Toronto on opening night. Boston's 5-3. The Hawks are 5-3. The Raptors are 5-4. The Knicks are 4-4. And then you get to seventh. The Bulls are 5-5. The Pacers are 4-5 in eighth. And then the Wizards 4-5. The Sixers are 4-6. So, look, and I think we would like expect some, like the Cavs will probably like just lose like a random game here or there, but like this has been obviously a very, very good start.
They may drop a game on this upcoming road trip.
Like, yes.
They could drop the game to Minnesota, who has really struggled at the gate so far, and yeah. Now Rudy Gobert is in health and safety protocols. Like there's,
Cavs aren't going to go that is,
81-1. Yeah. Like, I just want to watch Donovan Mitchell just show off two of the most dynamic offensive bigs he's ever played with Rudy. So.
Yeah, that quote the other night, I was like, huh. Like, he says things very innocuously.
Then I went back and read it. Apparently, he did that quite a bit in Utah towards the end, where he would just kind of throw shade at his coaches and teammates through the media, and like, but still like effuse praise on others. So it's like a healthy balance.
Yeah. All right. So I would assume he's back by next Sunday, though, but we'll see. Okay. All right. Again, if you have any questions.
Yeah, let's open it up to some questions. Maybe
we'll take three.
Thoughts in general.
Yeah, we'll take three. We're going to start.
One that I see.
Yeah, hit me.
I think you have it. Maybe. Well,
this
the one.
This. I mean, this is the only one.
This one. Yeah. Okay. It's a good thought exercise, at least.
I think what will happen.
Who does defend Evan?
LeVert will start, and then they will switch. Correct. That is what's going to happen.
Yeah. Whether LeBron forces a switch or the Cavs switch with LeBron, we'll see. But ideally, you maybe want – it might be a committee aspect. Like maybe it's LeVert, because you saw LeVert defending Jason Tatum at times down the stretch in that game against Boston. You saw
Dean
LeVert
Wade.
Provide you some – Dean Wade too, maybe. Like the Cavs may be just throwing bodies at LeBron and Anthony Davis, and you're going to have to lean more heavily on Allen and Mobley and then obviously LeVert. Maybe there's times Donovan Mitchell gets forced onto LeBron, and like I think it's a different beast than having to defend Jason Tatum, but like I feel more comfortable in saying like Donovan Mitchell will at least provide the effort. He may not like defend it perfectly, but at least he'll provide the effort. So it's interesting because the defensive dynamic of how this game against the Lakers will go is going to be fascinating. I think bench-wise, like this is a good momentum game for the Cavs to kind of get some of their reserves going against Detroit, and because the Lakers bench is not great, even though Russ is first in points per game off the bench right now. But, you know, I'm happy Russ is finding a role he functions in, because I was a big Westbrook fan when he was still that athletic freak, because it's just insane to watch him play basketball when at his apex. But the Lakers, just an interesting team. Like, there's no report on the injury, like who is and isn't available yet. Like, LeBron is dealing with some issues, so is AD. Like, the Lakers could rest their guys on Sunday, the Cavs could rest Donovan and Darius again, too, and shift focus to the Clippers game, because it's a back-to-back. You also have to kind of be cognizant of how hard you want to burn your guys in this game, and then have to deal with Paul George and probably a very better Clippers squad the following evening.
I will be extremely disappointed if Mitchell and Garland don't play and LeBron doesn't play. This is like one of those games in the season that is just like a popcorn. Like, let me just sit back and like watch some maybe sicko stuff happen. And like, no doubt, there's not a bone in my body that doubts LeBron dropping like 45 in this game just out of like spite.
And then posting the man in the arena quote on Instagram with him like just yamming on somebody.
Yeah, yeah. I just need it, and so don't put that out.
He posterizes Kevin Love again. The Love tries to draw the offensive foul.
Yeah.
But they're not going to call that on LeBron. That's going to probably possibly be a moment in tomorrow's afternoon game.
Just don't put it out in the universe that none of them can play. Okay, let's go to Chris with the Afro. With what Karras has shown to start, is there a number you'd be comfortable with in terms of a potential extension? Evan, I'm going to take a very coward's answer to this and just say that I need to see that they're going to agree to a CBA before I feel speculating about any numbers.
I think that's fair. He's currently making $18 million right now, correct?
Yeah, and like if they would have extended him in the summer, they would have had to go off of that number, which was never going to happen.
No, and I don't think he is an $18 million player, but because he plays at the wing, he can provide you theoretical shooting at least. He can play some defense. He can provide you playmaking. You see him work as a connective piece with the Cavs. Like his market could be Sexton-like, where it's like $12.5 million to $15 million annually, and it's just, does he want to play for like a playoff team? Maybe his role shifts, because somebody in the chat did mention like, hey, Evan Mobley could be the starting three next year, and you start Dean Wade at the four and get really freaky with it, and then like you have LeVert come off the bench. Is he comfortable in that role, or does he want to start? It's an interesting thought process and obviously a discussion, but he's played well. I just don't think he's an $18 to $20 million player at this juncture, but and you have to be cognizant of the Cavs just committing a lot of money to Allen, Garland, Mitchell, and eventually Mobley, and then maybe Isaac Okoro if they extend him too, but we'll see where that goes too. But it's just, it is an interesting thought exercise and something I haven't thought of much, but if you're asking me on the spot, something probably what they were offering Sexton last year, maybe a little bit more just because LeVert has the size and gives you a little bit more juice than Sexton does, but it's all good.
You'd be getting him age 29. He'll turn 29 before next season through probably like 32, 33. That's like you. I would expect almost something akin to it, a Kobe Altman special would make sense in this, depending on like what the
like non-guaranteed years,
non-guaranteed or front-loaded.
Front-loaded makes more sense to me, especially just because how Cleveland's caps like Allen is a flat 20 across the board. I think.
Yep.
Garland's and Mitchell's slides where it gets heftier towards the end.
Yeah.
Maybe they, and I would imagine Mobley does the same thing with his extension as well.
Yep.
When he does sign it. So yeah, maybe you do front load it so you can kind of counterbalance some of the heftier contracts that become even bulkier before the new CBA is at least. Because this all becomes a little bit irrelevant when the new CBA is agreed upon, because the Cavs can have a lot more space to work with. But for now, front loading it makes more sense.
Front loading just makes sense in terms of like if you want to maximize your cap space when Mitchell and Mobley new deals theoretically kick in, that is going to be like you have to maximize like your room on the margins there, and like front loading LeVert would make sense. But look, in December next month we are going to find out what the salary, what if like there's going to be like have to be a labor negotiation in the summer that could lead to a lockout, and that just complicates this. Like there's just there, we don't know some of the things here in terms of, you know, what this is going to look like. Nick and Evan, let's end on something I'm going to throw in here. Last call for questions. If anyone has them, please throw them in if you have not already. Kevin Love is also going to be a free agent next summer. Little older, obviously. Mm-hmm. Certainly no way they were going to extend off of his number. That is a cap hold of $45.1 million next summer. It is absolutely, he's going to make nowhere near close to that, I would guess. And no. You have some other, like, you have like a Dylan Windler $6 million like qualifying offer as well. Kevin Love, I think like a 2-year MLE sub MLE deal would make like a ton of sense.
Yeah, it would. And I mean, obviously, let's see what the market looks like. If you could bring Love back on a portion of your MLE and commit more of it to some actual wing depth, like, no, again, no disrespect, but Isaac Okoro just isn't showing it yet. Jetty Osman's here. Dylan Windler is present, but not really available. You still need to address this issue. Like, yeah, right now everything's clicking, but I think maybe that's going to rear its head in the playoffs a little bit. It's just the lack of perimeter depth or defense just in general the Cavs have. And we'll see how it goes. But yeah, giving a portion of your MLE to Love makes sense to me. I wouldn't do the full MLE if I just had to pick at the end of the day, but he's doing well again in his bench role. Like, we almost saw him get a triple-double last night and was one rebound shy, I believe, but he's good. He's still got gas in the tank. I think he is really adapted to this role really well. And I'm excited to see kind of what dynamic he brings, and just he could be a key player like he was against Detroit. Sorry, I was reading what Chris with the Afro said, saying Winland deserves the world. Yes, yes, he does. He's a great guy. We feel bad for him because I think the mental hurdle of recovery is just going to be the hardest part when you're continually getting hurt.
Yeah, I had a friend ask me the other day, like, when's the point you cut bait on him? And the answer is you cut bait on him when you can use his salary to make a trade for another player and you wish him the best. That's maybe where this ends. And on this,
he's here right now as a salary.
Yes. Okay. Henrique 777. What was our better record? Do you guys think it's possible to settle the new record? So I think this question is asking, what is the Cavs' best record of all time, and could they beat that record? So I'm gonna run through here. Here's just what historically this week: 2009 Cavs. They won 66 games. I don't think this team is gonna win more than 66 games. That is really, really hard. 2010.
The frustrating thing is about that Cavs team, real quick. Mike Brown phoned it in, and they didn't break the all-time home winning record. I think the Cavs only lost one or two games at home that season.
Tough. 2010, the Cavs went 61-21. 2016, 57-25. 1992, 57-25. 1989, 57-25. 1993, 54-28. 2015, 53-29. And then 2017 is 51-31. I think beating 51 or 53 is like the two realistic ones on that list. Like getting up to 54 wins feels like a reasonable cap.
I agree. We had talked about this on the show prior to the season. I think the line was 46.5 for this Cavs team, and you and I both said smash the over on that one if you're able to. And if you're able to get in on that, congrats, because I think this Cavs team will be between 51 to 55 wins this season. So if you're – hot take, I know. If you are 51 and 31, or if you are 55 and 27, like, that's a really good place to be, because they won 46 games last season, I believe, and that's 44. So adding Donovan Mitchell, I think organically will add 5 to 6 wins to this team to begin with, but with how they're playing right now and just how, like, everything just seems to be clicking for them so easily, like, it makes it more realistic to say, like, okay, maybe you add 10-ish wins to that win total from last season and just kind of keep leveling up from there.
In the East, the bottom East is a little worse this year. That gives you maybe some feeding opportunities against some of these bad teams. Last year, the top four in the East was the Heat at 53, the Celtics at 51, the Bucks at 51, and the 76ers at 51. The Raptors were fifth at 48. So you might need 50 plus to get into that. Jamal, salute.
Thanks, Jamal. Appreciate you.
I do, though. I'm going to take a second to apologize to absolutely nobody for coming in. You come in and try to roast us in the comments, even if you mean well. I'm just going to – it's Saturday. I'm vibing. Don't care. Come in, be negative. Don't. You're gonna get some smoke. But Evan,
it's free content, guys.
Whew, I should sleep more. Sleep's great. Evan, any final thoughts?
No, not really. If you are able to, go enjoy this beautiful weather today. I'm gonna go destroy my allergies in a hot second, but I let the leaves collect in the backyard. I keep telling myself that, and I have to go take care of it now. But no, Sunday's game should be fun. We'll be live after that one, of course, like we had mentioned, towards the top. It's a really fun back-to-back in Los Angeles. I'm excited to see how both games go, because maybe they aren't up to the same caliber as playing Boston, especially on ESPN, but like playing the Lakers is always a big deal, especially when LeBron is there now. And then the Clippers with Ty, and then Paul George, and like the Clippers are just such a well-balanced, interesting team that they can defend the Cavs in such unique ways that I'm interested to see how they respond and just how JB manages load stuff and all that, everything in between. Like it's this road trip is very intriguing to me, despite it not being very noteworthy with some of the opponents that Cavs are facing.
Yeah. Check
other than like obviously the major storylines, and there's nothing on the injury report yet for 2:30. So
yeah, no,
probably won't hear anything until 8 o'clock tonight because it's 5 PM Los Angeles time when the Cavs have to submit it.
Yeah. No betting line yet either. There are a couple lines from BetOnline for that game, but no betting line for the Cavs. I'll be curious to see what that looks like. Usually the home team, gets a bump, but we'll be curious. The Cavs have just been better. I'll be curious if they're like slight favorites. And well, Chris, the Everest commented so much. I want to shout him out one more time. Am I toxic or just living in the moment? That's the question. Live in the moment. That's always the way to do it. Enjoy it. Have fun. thanks again for tuning in. Because of you, the viewers here, this went way longer than we thought. Evan came in and saved me from talking to myself a bunch, which was wonderful. So salute to you, Evan, for coming through. I wonder,
she's out doing wedding stuff. Salute to me for cleaning my office and getting a notification on my phone that Locked On Cavs went live. And I was confused at first because I was just like, I thought we were going live Sunday. So I was just like, crap. And I had put together everything really quick because I thought I had to be here.
Nope. I was just going to throw some free content up. We're going to go. We are going to begin live tomorrow. We'll tweet this and put it on Instagram and the TikTok and everything as well. We are going to go live tomorrow on our YouTube page after Cavs Lakers, do our recap live here on the pod. And then maybe instead of segment three, instead of our normal empty out the notebooks, we'll take some questions about the game, look ahead to the Clippers game as well. But thanks to everyone for tuning in. I'm Chris.
Have a good.
That's been Evan. Evan, take us out for real.
Yeah, to subscribe to us on YouTube if you're watching this after the fact. Thanks to everyone who joined, and just go enjoy your Saturday. It's a great weekend. Some R&R is never a bad thing for anyone, especially for your mental well-being.
Peace out. Go hydrate. And again, sleep's great. Get a really good night of sleep tonight. Enjoy the time change. Extra hour of sleep. We love to see it. Everyone, be well.